This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock. My name is Luke Barry and you're listening to EN4 News. Breaking news just in. At least 40 people have been killed in a suspected suicide bombing in the Afghan capital, Kabul. But in today's programme, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has travelled to London to meet Prime Minister Theresa May to discuss the UK's Brexit deal. We spoke to an expert to get a better understanding of what was said. The divisive ballot on teachers' pay in Scotland will close at 5pm today. The Education Institute of Scotland have urged members to reject the government's proposed 3% pay rise.
The Scottish Government refused to respond positively to our pay campaign. We will ballot for industrial action.
And following the news that Midlothian Council are introducing new licensing laws that will limit how much parents can drink around their children, two Edinburgh bartenders give us their view on whether the capital should adopt similar regulations.
I think it puts a lot of pressure on the bartenders themselves. Obviously, it's not going to be management that are watching it. It's going to be the bartenders that are responsible.
But first, here is David Paul with news from the UK and the rest of the world.
Thanks, Luke. Theresa May is chairing a cabinet meeting with ministers in Downing Street to discuss her proposed Brexit plan. Nicola Sturgeon is also in attendance to show her opposition to the deal. May needs the support of the Democratic Unionist Party, who aren't happy with current plans for Northern Ireland. Justice Secretary David Gawke says he hopes all parties will come to an agreement on the offer.
The best interest of the country as a whole is for us to have a stable government in Westminster, and that requires the DUP to work with us.
It has been reported today that NHS Scotland fared poorly, as at least 8 out of 14 boards failed to meet key targets in A&E, cancer and routine operations. Across the UK, the NHS has been failing to make key waiting time targets throughout 2018. A BBC analysis found that 29 trusts and boards out of 157 across the country were falling short of their objectives. The NHS have stated that they recognise the importance of a speedy delivery of care, and in Scotland have introduced programmes aimed to tackle long waiting times. Ivanka Trump has been accused of sending important US documents via a personal email address, many in violation of federal records rules, echoing the claims made against Hillary Clinton in 2016. The emails have prompted immediate accusations of hypocrisy. A spokesman has denied any of the messages contained classified information. Three people who died following a shooting at a Chicago hospital on Monday afternoon have been named. Dr. Tamara O'Neill, a former partner of the shooter, pharmacist Dana Less, and Officer Samuel Jimenez were all killed. The suspect is yet to be named by police. Mayor Rahm Emanuel has said that his thoughts are with the victims' families at this time.
I ask each of us to hold our children, our loved ones, all that closer. Remember what is important in life.
A sperm whale, which washed up dead in an Indonesian national park, has almost 6 kilos of plastic in its stomach. The 10-meter-long animal has swallowed 115 cups, as well as bags, sandals and hundreds of pieces of string. Indonesia is the second largest plastic polluter after China, according to a recent study. The study said that the country produces 3.2 million tonnes of mismanaged plastic waste every year, of which 1.2 million tonnes ends up in the ocean. That was the latest. Back to you, Luke.
Thanks, David. Pressure on Theresa May's Brexit plan is mounting as Nicola Sturgeon lands in London to discuss alternatives that benefit Scotland more. Daisy Smith has the story.
Knock knock, it's Brexit again. Theresa May will today welcome Nicola Sturgeon to 10 Downing Street to discuss alternatives to the current Brexit proposal. SNP MPs have already decided that they will vote against the deal in the House of Commons. Referring to the plan, Sturgeon said, it must not be an option between frying pan or fire. MSP Tom Arthur from the SNP party agreed with Sturgeon and said we should not just take a bad deal.
Well, the First Minister has been very clear. We have to reject this false choice that has been put forward by the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister is now telling us that the only way to avoid a no deal is to agree to her bad deal. But for months, for years even, she was telling us that no deal is better than a bad deal. So we have to reject this false choice between a no deal or Theresa May's bad deal. And we actually have to go and take a considered, calm and rational look at this and put forward an alternative. And the best alternative, short of remaining within the European Union, is for the whole of the UK to remain a member of the single market and customs union.
And it's not just Nicola Sturgeon that doesn't agree with the Brexit plan, which has caused political discourse within the majority of parties and divided the nation. Looking at the bigger picture, Alan Convery, a political professor at the University of Edinburgh, analyses the current situation.
I think it's been particularly difficult for the Conservative Party at a UK level and a Scottish level. So some Scottish Conservative MPs have indicated they will support Theresa May's deal. Others are holding their counsel for the moment, and one like Ross Thompson, who the MP for Aberdeen South, who supported Brexit in the beginning, has said he doesn't want to support this agreement. So I think it's caused problems there. I think the other parties are perhaps more united in their pro-European stance, but we also know that about a third of voters who voted for Scottish independence in 2014 also voted for Brexit. So within the SNP, I think there's quite a pro-European stance, but within the kind of coalition of voters who voted for independence, there are different views. And Brexit has been one of these issues that's really split both parties.
The uncertainty of post-Brexit Britain has led people to suggest that there could be another independence referendum on the horizon for Scotland. This could be a discussion point between Sturgeon and May in London today. However, there hasn't been any evidence of an increased interest in Scottish independence. Labour MSP Neil Findlay believes it could be as catastrophic as Brexit.
No, I don't support another referendum. I think what this Brexit process has shown, that trying to remove a country from a 40-year-old political arrangement or political union with the European Union is extremely complex, difficult, and could be very damaging. The last thing we need is to remove ourselves from a 300-year social, economic and political arrangement with the rest of the UK. So I think more chaos through another independence referendum on top of the chaos that exists with Brexit is the last thing we need.
When Nicola Sturgeon leaves this evening, Theresa May's job is far from over. She leaves for Brussels tomorrow to meet with the President of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, for further Brexit talks. For now, Scotland and the rest of the UK are still facing the unknown.
Thanks very much, Daisy. Weeks of disagreement come to a head today as the ballot on Scottish teachers' pay will close. The Educational Institute of Scotland's ballot was opened following a dispute between teaching unions and the government over how much teachers should be paid.
Scottish teachers' pay has been a point of contention for the past few weeks after the body responsible for negotiating pay deals failed to come to an agreement. A body made up of the Scottish Government, council representatives and union negotiators is supposed to sort out pay deals for teachers. But the group failed to reach an agreement as the government and COSLA, a cross-party council organisation, refused to meet teacher unions' demand for a 10% pay rise for all teachers. The government's initial proposal was for teachers who earn up to £36,000 to receive a 3% pay rise, but this was revised so that it applied to everyone who earned up to £80,000. Amid the debate, 30,000 teachers took to Glasgow streets to protest the government's 3% offer.
You can put children first if you put teachers last. Covering up their education omni-shambles in a school near you.
In the last 8 years, I'm actually learning less than I was 8 years ago. So any time we've had a pay increase, it's been taken back off in pension contributions, so we're actually earning less.
The Educational Institute of Scotland, or EIS, General Secretary Larry Flanagan addressed union members at the march, urging them to reject the government's offer.
This campaign is not just about pay. We said value education, value teachers, as a very carefully chosen campaign slogan. And across the country, as I have attended meetings where members have turned out, people have said pay is important. But it's not the only issue. Teachers are on their knees coping with excessive workload, and closing on the cheap budget cuts.
Immediately following the march, the EIS opened a ballot so that its members could vote to reject or accept the government's final pay offer. The result of the EIS ballot will be announced at 5 p.m. today. However, this result will not be the end of the disagreement, as whilst teachers have voiced their opinions, the government and unions will still have to work together to finalise a pay deal. In fact, if the ballot confirms that teachers want to reject the government's offer, there is a high possibility of industrial action, as Larry Flanagan confirmed.
The Scottish Government refused to respond positively to our pay campaign. We will ballot for industrial action if that is what it is.
Luca joins me now in the studio. Luca, what do you expect to see from this ballot?
So, following the tension over the past 3 weeks, teachers are very much expected to reject the government's current pay offer. It's been clear since the ballot was announced that they aim to strike, as a trade union needs members to contribute to a ballot or vote to justify industrial action. This, of course, will involve a whole new process of organising a strike, but it may actually be an easy process if the vote to reject the pay deal is unanimous. COSLA have refused to comment until the outcome of the ballot is announced. But what's interesting is, in a press release, they made it clear that a 3% pay rise for all teachers is all they can afford. They said they have dug deep to put an offer of 3% on the table for the entire local government workforce at a cost of £350 million in total. The result of the ballot will be published at 5pm today. And if the vote to reject the government's pay offer is overwhelming, strike action is very likely and could result in schools across Scotland closing early before Christmas.
Well, thank you very much, Luca. Still to come this afternoon, a smoking ban is set to be introduced within Scottish prisons later this month. We go inside Her Majesty's prison in Barwini to get the view of prisoners. And under new licensing laws, parents will now be watched by bar and restaurant staff when consuming alcohol around their children. We spoke to those in the industry to gauge the effect this could have. But first, let's catch up with a rising local band who are preparing for one of their biggest weekends ever. I spoke to the lead singer of Bright Skies earlier today.
Hey, you should see me on the cover of The Enemy. Stop being such a player, you're never gonna be a zombie slayer.
So I'm joined now by Lee McLennan, the frontman of the Bright Skies, who are getting ready to perform at the EH6 Festival on Friday. The EH6 Festival takes place in Leith this coming weekend. It's only the second year of the Live Music Food and Drink Festival in Edinburgh, which takes place across 10 venues in Leith. With over 100 acts promised, big names such as Jake Bugg, Jerry Cinnamon and The Coral will headline the festival, but there are also a number of young local bands on the bill. Now, Liam, you must be excited to be heading to this festival. It's a big event, big crowds and some big names there as well.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely delighted. It was an honour to be picked and we just really can't wait to get ourselves on stage and show Edinburgh what we can do.
Now, you got through this through the Battle of the Band scheme. Do you mind telling us about how you won that and kind of how that works? Because it's quite unique, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we shared a Facebook post a few months ago now, and it was from EH6, and it said for bands to share it, and then they would be in with a chance of playing at the festival. So we thought, well, we might as well try our luck. And as it came to it, we got a notification on the Facebook and says that we've been whittled down to the final four, which was brilliant. And then it went to a public vote, and the public voted for us, and we won. So brilliant.
Have you guys done something similar to this? Is this the biggest event you've done, or have you done similar stuff in the past?
It's definitely the biggest festival we've done. We've played a couple of festivals so far, but this is definitely the biggest show we've done in terms of people that we've played with and like the size of venues and stuff. So it's pretty exciting, really.
So we just heard there a sample of your song In Colour. Now, can you give us a bit of a background into how the band came about and what your inspirations are? It's good music, if I can say so myself.
Thank you very much. We're all more or less like mutual friends. Me and my lead guitarist, Callan, we met when we were going to see Blur at the Barrowlands a few years ago. And we met through one of our mutual friends, and we just decided then and there to be in a band. And then the bassist I knew already, and I knew him, he was one of my pals, and then we've been through a few drummers so far. The first drummer I went to college with, and then the second drummer was a friend of a friend, and now our third drummer is a friend of a friend. So there's a common theme. Ever since we've got the final lineup, we've just like kicked on and rolled with what we've got, and we love it, really.
Have you got plans for the future? Have you got an album or maybe more tours coming?
I think we're going to try and release a couple of tunes in the start of 2019. We've got a couple penned, so we're looking to record and release them pretty soon. As in terms of tours, I mean, we don't know yet. We might do, we might not do.
And finally, how can fans keep in touch? If they want to keep up with all the updates with the band, what's the best way to find you?
Probably through Twitter or Facebook. We're at The Bright Skies on Twitter. And just The Bright Skies on Facebook. We've got Instagram. I think we're The Bright Skies Band on Instagram. I think that's all we've got. You can search us on Spotify and iTunes and all that as well.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much for chatting to us, Liam. Best of luck for the weekend.
Not a problem. Thanks very much for
having
me.
You can catch The Bright Skies at EH6 in Leith Theatre from 6:30 this Friday. our thanks again to Liam from the Brits Guys for coming in to chat to us. Now, from the end of this month, tobacco will be prohibited in all Scottish prisons to encourage healthier lifestyles and prevent guards from inhaling smoke. Scott Hope spoke to prisoners about the ban in Glasgow's high security HMP Barwinnie.
The door is closing on the days of smoking in Scottish jails. The Scottish Prison Service, or the SPS, will introduce a ban on all tobacco and smoking products in Scottish prisons starting from November 30th. Three quarters of all Scottish prisoners are smokers, which is about more than three times the amount of smokers that are on the outside. I recently visited HM Prison Barwinnie in Glasgow, and I asked a few of the inmates there how they feel about the looming ban.
So I feel that the big smokers will find it hard.
If you want to say stop now, I think I'll just stop.
Barwinnie is the biggest prison in Scotland, housing over 1,300 inmates, with roughly 80% of them being smokers. After the ban, the prisoners will be allowed to vape in their cells instead. To ease the transition, the inmates will be given the vaping equipment for free for the first 2 months. Then it will be discounted until April before finally being sold at full price. The vapes have already been issued, and the prisoners that I spoke to say that they just don't measure up to traditional cigarettes.
But I think it's the mind. Because you put that vape up to your mouth.
It's not the same.
It's not the same, but it's just... These guys smoke because they're nervous in here, mate, as well. It's a lot of even mental health as well, smoking. So it is. And I'm not making you ask for the truth, and I'll tell you the truth. There's a lot of guys who usually rely on it.
I think they'll find it hard going on to the vape, because the vapes, they're nothing like a fag, really. It's just like you're constant puffing it until it's done.
Between the free vapes, smoking cessation classes, and other resources to help the prisoners quit, the SBS are spending about £200,000 on the ban. A guard named Alan in the Seahall cells told me more about their efforts. As one of the prisoners explained,
They've offered them obviously patches, they've got the nicotine cigarette, the chewing gum, obviously, you know, how to recover from the cravings of that, you know, go to the gym, take more exercise. Now they've introduced the vapes, they feel that smoke cessation didn't have to pick up, that people won't actually give up smoking to do nothing.
Despite all the resources and the planning, everyone seems to expect the ban to have its thieving problems.
Those guys have been smoking for 50 years and they're going to stop them. Come on, it's going to be, mate, there's going to be definitely a bit of backlash. There's going to be guys trying to smuggle it, guys trying to stash it.
After the ban, tobacco will be treated the same as drugs, mobile phones, and even some weapons in jail, all prohibited items. The SPS are confident that they are well prepared for any consequences of the ban, and that prisoners will be well supported during the transition. Whether the ban is actually a success remains to be seen.
Midlothian Council has issued new regulations to licensed premises. Staff will have to watch the amount of alcohol being drunk by parents around children. They also warn that pubs have a duty to protect children from strong language, violence and disorder. With us today, we have Jack Sinclair from Montpellier's Bar and Restaurant to talk about the benefits of this new licence, and the manager from the Place Hotel Edinburgh, Gillian Hare, to discuss the downsides of adapting to these regulations. So I'm joined here by two very experienced bartenders. I'm going to speak to Gillian first, because I understand you've got some opinions on this matter. Do you think it's, obviously Midlothian Council have introduced this, do you think it's a good thing for Edinburgh to follow suit?
I think it puts a lot of pressure on the bartenders themselves. Obviously, it's not going to be management that are watching it. It's going to be the bartenders that are responsible. They already have a duty of care to adults. As soon as you add in that duty of care to children, people are going to get very opinionated. It's going to make the bartender's job a lot harder.
Do you think that maybe it's something you should have to do? Because you've got to look at people, you've got a duty of care as it is, but is this maybe a step too far?
I don't think it's a step too far in that sense. I think it's more, I mean, would you trust your kids with someone that you met out in the street while you went out for a pint? No, so why are you trusting a bartender you've never met before?
Jack, what are your thoughts on the matter?
Yeah, well, being a bartender, it is our responsibility to look out for responsible adults drinking with children. So what we don't allow parents or adults to drink with children if they're sitting in the bar area, but we... However, if they're sitting in the restaurant, for example, we can't really stop them, but I think parents or adults should set a better example by maybe not drinking in children's company.
So do you feel comfortable having to like guide somebody? If you saw children here, would you be comfortable to say to them, sorry, we can't serve the alcohol, is that maybe a step too far for you?
I would find ways to maybe restrict it in the company of children.
Obviously, Gillian, can you understand the rationale behind councils maybe implementing this thing? You said that obviously bartenders have a lot of things to think about, but can you see the point of view in trying to sort of maybe protect children from drunk parents, I guess?
No, that's absolutely fine. It's not the point that I'm making. It's obviously, it would, if this law came into place, the whole point is people might, the small businesses might suffer in rural towns and things, but they can't take their kids out to the pub because of fear of not being able to have a drink or be served a drink. The fear is more, so I can do my job, I can tell someone, sorry, you can't have any more alcohol, you're with a child, I think you've had enough, etc, etc. One, they're not going to like me, and two, they're then going to leave anyway, and that child is still at risk. So putting this law into place and putting that pressure on bartenders is just moving the problem elsewhere. It's not actually fixing the problem of parents drinking around the children.
But Jack, so quickly, Gillian's just said to us there that she reckons that this isn't actually going to solve the problem, it's just going to maybe educate people a little bit, that's maybe the solution. Do you think that this is a problem that needs to be solved, and will this like proposed legislation solve it?
Yes, I do suppose it needs to be solved. I mean, like I said earlier, we can't stop people from drinking in general because it is legal, but I think there should be restrictions set in bars in Scotland, especially for children to not be around responsible adults drinking in bars.
Change is afoot in Edinburgh, with the controversial universal credit policy rolling out across the city next Wednesday. Although it won't be fully implemented nationwide until 2022, there's a worry that the system is not working for certain people. Our reporter Ellen Beaton takes a closer look.
I lost 25% of my body weight because obviously a food bank parcels once a week and it's only 3 days worth of food. So you've got to make that stretch. And I have two kids who I have at the weekend, and it affected my mental health. That went downhill and it just broke me.
This is Alex, a young disabled father from the Highlands near Inverness. In July last year, the government's new benefit system, Universal Credit, arrived in his area. And ever since, he's really struggled.
Living in Kilwoki, and I didn't have a car at the time. There's no bus service. I couldn't get to any of the sort of support services that are, even though Inverness isn't that far away, it is when there's no transport. And the job centre say, well, like I asked for food, and they say it's not our responsibility.
Alex's story is familiar to anyone who's been following Universal Credit, as it's gradually been introduced across the country. The new scheme has been criticised by the Scottish Government, by the UN, and by dozens of charities who deal with poverty. In October, the Scottish Government even voted to ask Westminster to halt the rollout entirely, but the UK Government are pushing ahead regardless. They've worked on this reform for far too long. In a matter of days, Universal Credit will arrive in Edinburgh, just in time for Christmas. But what exactly is Universal Credit? Well, that's part of the problem. It's really very complicated.
So my name is Daniel Clegg. And I'm a senior lecturer in social policy at the University of Edinburgh.
Can this new scheme be explained in just one sentence? We asked a professor.
So Universal Credit is a new benefit that's being introduced progressively across the UK. It's basically a kind of integration of a number of in-work and out-of-work means-tested benefits, things like income-based job seekers allowance, child tax credit, working tax credit, housing benefit, etc. It's going to merge them into a single benefit system.
Not quite one sentence, but it sounds reasonable enough. The problem is that the new benefit system is designed to mirror the world of work. Just like with your job, Universal Credit is paid in arrears. You get the money at the end of the month. The Trussell Trust is a nationwide network of food banks. We met up with Bethany from Edinburgh's Northwest Food Bank to ask her about the relationship between food banks and Universal Credit.
There's a surge in food bank usage wherever it's been introduced. Is that something that you're worried about?
Yes, absolutely. So Universal Credit gets rolled out on the 20th of November and clients' first payment will be the 3rd of January. So Christmas is already a horrendous time of year for people that are living in crisis or living on the poverty line or below it. Add on top of that people aren't going to have any benefit payments across that time. It's unimaginable what people are going to feel. It's not the pressure of Christmas, it's not the weight, it's the time of year. It's the time of year that makes this phase of the rollout particularly harrowing.
Universal Credit arrives in Edinburgh on the 28th of November.
Now, it's over to Paige Beresford with the latest Scottish sports news.
Thank you, Luke. In football, it's a crucial night for Scotland as they go into their must-win Nations League match tonight at home against Israel. Only a victory will do for Scotland at Hampden, as it will ensure promotion to the next tier and a guaranteed playoff spot in the Euro 2020s. Scotland manager Alex McLeish believes that his side can get the job done.
The one thing that the players will always do is try to play at the best level they can play at. And if every one of these guys does that tonight, as I said to them pre the Albania game, I would be positive about the outcome.
Scottish rugby fullback Stuart Hogg has spoken for the first time about his ankle injury. Hogg started the season in good form but was forced to undergo surgery after hurting his ankle in September. 7 weeks later, he was back and in full form against South Africa before the same injury forced him off. Speaking ahead of Saturday's match against Argentina, Hogg said he feels fresh and ready for the next match despite the injury.
There's a lot of hard work done along the way, and some grueling times, some tough times during the rehab. But look, I feel good, I feel fresh and feel ready to get wired into this week again.
Scottish Premiership matches will be shown live only on Sky Sports from 2020 after SPFL has struck a new broadcast deal worth £160 million. BT Sport will no longer show any Scottish football as Premier Sports have won rights to show between 12 and 16 League Cup games live as well as the highlights. Back to you, Luke, for the rest of the stories.
Thank you very much, Paige. And finally, it's Book Week this week in Scotland, so to commemorate this, our reporter Liam Mackay has unleashed his inner poet. He spoke to award-winning writers Mark Grist and Alan Bissett to hear about alternative styles of writing.
Norman was more or less born into Parliament. Both of his parents were peers of the realm. They taught him the value of forming an argument, stalling for time, and repeating yourself. And his school was expensive, which meant that he left with high self-esteem and some very good grades. And from schoolyard to manor to hallways of power, the fittings and decor, it all stays the same. So Norman felt cosy.
That was Mark Grist, an award-winning slam poet, showing me how it's done. The first poetry slam took place in a boxing ring with the intention of getting more people emotionally invested in poetry. Mark found viral recognition by beating a 17-year-old rapper in the finals of a rap battle tournament. He discusses the stigma around rap music.
I see students outside of classrooms that have been sent out who got in trouble for writing lyrics in the lesson or rapping about stuff, and were getting in trouble for that. And I think it's really interesting, because I think if they were writing poems, I don't think we would have a problem. And I think there's a view often that poetry is definitely more, you know, is considered more rigorous and more complex. Maybe we have a perceived gender and skin tone and background associated with intelligence, and that there's a lot to dismantle to change that perspective of what intelligence in the human being looks like.
Mark took his poetry to the Edinburgh Fringe, but he wasn't exactly prepared.
And we wrote the show on the train up to Edinburgh, and we didn't know what we were doing, and we had an absolute blast, and it was great. The community vibe was wicked. We just had a dream Edinburgh.
As well as discussing poetry, I talked to award-winning author and playwright Alan Bissett about embracing a Scottish accent. Writing in Scots always felt natural to him.
I felt that if I was going to write about them as they are, I had to use the language that they speak, because I think language is a very strong indicator of who a person is. The register that they employ, the method in which they communicate, is a good marker of many things to do with their background, or to do with their social class, or their attitudes, or their, sometimes even maybe their morals.
Alan has also turned one of his short stories about Moira, the hardest woman in Falkirk, into a one-man stage play which has toured the nation.
And it was only when I read it out to my flatmate that I realised it was actually something that would work as a live piece. And then she sort of challenged me to write a new chapter every day, so I could read it when she came home for her work. And by the end of the week, I had a play, you know, six different scenes. And I thought, well, this is now an hour-long play. And then it just felt like a natural step to try and turn it into a stage piece.
I hope it was fun, but now we are done. I'm Liam Mackay, and now it's time for all of us at EN4 News to say goodbye.
He's a poet and he doesn't even know it. Brilliant effort from Liam there. But before we go, let's remind you of today's headlines. First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has met with Theresa May to discuss the UK's Brexit deal. The divisive battle on teachers' pay in Scotland will close in an hour. Teachers across the capital are expected to take a striking action sometime before Christmas following a dispute over pay. The Universal Credit Benefit Scheme is making its way to Edinburgh next week. This sparks concerns over the pressure that will be put on already struggling food banks, as the scheme is set to make many families financially worse off. And an update from the bombing in the Afghan capital, Kabul. 40 people have been killed and 60 people injured as religion scholars met to celebrate Prophet Muhammad's birthday. And now for the weather and travel. Conditions will remain mostly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon, with rain showers expected into the night and into the early hours of tomorrow. Temperatures set to stay steady at around 6 degrees. If you're heading out on the roads tonight, look out for busy traffic in all the usual spots on the city bypass in the centre of town towards Princes Street. Look out for temporary traffic lights on Gorgie Road next to Aldi. Thanks very much for everyone tuning in to the 3 o'clock programme. From all of us at E4 News, it's goodbye for now.
Hear it, feel it, listen it. Energy, Edinburgh, Napier, Radio Group. Talk, tunes, tales, and talent.